The Strand Magazine, Volume 26, November, 1903. The Return of Sherlock Holmes by Arthur Conan Doyle. 2. The Adventure of the Norwood Builder. "From the point of view of the criminal expert," said Mr. Sherlock Holmes, "London has become a singularly uninteresting city since the death of the late lamented Professor Moriarty. I can hardly think that you would find many decent citizens to agree with you," I answered. Well, I must not be selfish," said he with a smile, as he pushed back his chair from the breakfast table. "The community is certainly the gainer, and no one the loser, save the poor out-of-work specialist whose occupation is gone. With that man in the field, one's morning paper presented infinite possibilities. Often it was only the smallest trace, Watson, the faintest indication, and yet it was enough to tell me that the great malignant brain was there, as the gentlest tremors of the edges of the web remind one of the foul spider which lurks in the center. Petty thefts, wanton assaults, purposeless outrage. To the man who held the clue, all could be worked out into one connected whole. To the scientific student of the higher criminal world, no capital in Europe offered the advantages which London then possessed. But now..." He shrugged his shoulders in humorous deprecation of the state of things which he had himself done so much to produce. At the time of which I speak, Holmes had been back for some months, and I, at his request, had sold my practice and returned to share the old quarters at Baker Street. A young doctor named Verner had purchased my small Kensington practice and given with astonishing legerdemain the highest price that I ventured to ask, an incident which only explained itself some years later when I found out that Verner was a distant relation of Holmes and that it was my friend who had really found the money. Our months of partnership had not been so uneventful as he had stated, for I find on looking over my notes that this period included the case of the papers of ex-President Murillo and also the shocking affair of the Dutch steamship Friesland, which so nearly cost us both our lives. His cold and proud nature was always averse, however, to anything in the shape of public applause, and he bound me in the most stringent terms to say no further word of himself, his method, or his successes, a prohibition which, as I have explained, has only now been removed. Mr. Sherlock Holmes was leaning back in his chair after his whimsical protest, and was unfolding his morning paper in a leisurely fashion, when our attention was arrested by a tremendous ring at the bell, followed immediately by a hollow, drumming sound, as if someone were beating on the outer door with his fist. As it opened, there came a tumultuous rush into the hall, rapid feet clattered upon the stair, and an instant later a wild-eyed and frantic young man, pale, disheveled, and palpitating, burst into the room. He looked from one to the other of us, and under our gaze of inquiry, he became conscious that some apology was needed for this unceremonious entry. "I'm sorry, Mr. Holmes," he cried. "You mustn't blame me. I am nearly mad. Mr. Holmes, I am the unhappy John Hector McFarlane." He made the announcement as if the name alone would explain both his visit and his manner, but I could see by my companion's unresponsive face that it meant no more to him than to me. "Have a cigarette, Mr. McFarlane," said he, pushing his case across. "I am sure that with your symptoms, my friend Dr. Watson here would prescribe a sedative. The weather has been so very warm these last few days. Now, if you feel a little more composed, I should be glad if you would sit down in that chair and tell us very slowly and quietly who you are and what it is that you want. You mentioned your name as if I should recognize it, but I assure you that, beyond the obvious facts that you are a bachelor, a solicitor, a Freemason, and an asthmatic, I know nothing whatever about you." Familiar as I was with my friend's methods, it was not difficult for me to follow his deductions, and to observe the untidiness of attire, the sheaf of legal papers, the watch-charm, and the breathing which had prompted them. Our client, however, stared in amazement.